those are Argentina. With those are Argentina. With those are Argentina. With those are Argentina. Those are Argentina. With 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 those are Argentina. With
one of the posters that's really caught my eye is one on giant penguin bones, and that's by Carolina Acosta Hospitalecce, and she's at the Museum de la Plata in Argentina. So, Carolina, could you tell us just how big these penguins could get?
Well, when we talk about giant penguin, we talk about penguin than more than 1 meter 100. But this penguin particularly is more than 2 meter length. I could make the calculations to estimate the body mass and the body length of the penguin, because the bones really caught my attention, and results said that penguin was at least 2 meter length and at least 116 kilometers of body mass.
Okay, so the bones that you actually found, what were they? Was it a whole skeleton?
No, it's not a complete skeleton. Complete skeletons are really hard to find. Only a few complete skeletons are known from all the world. And particularly in Antarctica, only two partial articulated skeletons are known. I studied that skeleton that belonged to the same species I presented here. Here we have two isolated remains belonging to different penguins. One of the bone of the foot, the tarsometatarsus, metatarsus, and the other one is the bone of the wing, that is a fragment of a humerus.
Okay, so it's just two very small bones relative to the whole body. How yes. are you able to build up the body size and body mass estimates?
Okay, I can estimate those parameters because the bone of the foot is the appropriate bone because it supports all the weight of the penguin when the animal is standing and the animal needs to walk. It doesn't happen the same with the humerus, the bone of the wing. I cannot estimate certainly the size of the penguins I know only from the humerus. But when I talk about the penguin known from the tarsometatarsus, estimations are reliable. This is the bone that in a modern penguin and in different species of fossil penguins resulted a bone that can indicate the size in a reliable form.
Okay, and this penguin, can we work anything out about it paleoecologically? Do we know what it was doing? Was it kind of the same as modern penguins?
Yes, comparing with modern penguins, this bird was a large bird and a robust penguin. From the tarsometatarsus, we can calculate body mass and length. And from these parameters, we can extrapolate another biological parameters. For example, the time the penguin could be underwater. This penguin was able to dive underwater for several minutes according to the body mass and according to the size of the penguin. But according to other studies I could make in other skeleton belonging to the same species, I can say that this penguin was a large bird that pursued underwater different fishes for food, and maybe this species preyed on large fishes.
Okay, and penguins in general, when do we first see them evolve?
penguins appears in the Paleocene. It is 62 million years ago, and the oldest penguins are known in New Zealand through two different species, and one species is coming from Antarctica, from the Cross Valley Formation in Antarctica. So we think penguins appear probably a little older than that, but we know penguin from 62 years, million years old.
So that's pretty close to the end Cretaceous mass extinction, isn't it?
Yes,
so they really appeared quite quickly after that extinction event.
Well, probably penguins or bears really related to penguins, a penguin-like bird appears previous to the extinction of the Cretaceous Paleocene. Because in the Paleocene we have penguins that really are penguins. So it's not strange to think that in the Cretaceous can appear a penguin, a proto-penguin, but a penguin at sea.
Do you think there's still plenty more penguin discoveries to be made?
Yes, of course. We know a lot of penguins, new penguins and new species from the last 5 or 7 years ago, but we need to discover yet complete skeletons. We need associated material. I'm trying to find it. This year, maybe in Antarctica appears something.
Okay, best of luck with it. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So I'm here with Daniel Field from Yale, who's looking at the origin of modern birds. Could you tell us about your research?
Certainly. So what I'm presenting here is some work that I conducted as a graduate fellow at the Smithsonian. And what I'm looking at here is the origin of modern bird biogeography. So if you look at modern bird diversity, modern birds are incredibly diverse with over 10,000 species, and the majority of this diversity is restricted to the southern continents, things like South America, Africa, and Australasia. And therefore, there's been a historically popular idea that modern bird diversity became distributed the way it is today by the breakup of a formerly contiguous southern landmass called Gondwana, which caused some of these lineages to become restricted to South America, Africa, and Australasia today. In my project here, I look at an enigmatic fossil from Wyoming and perform a phylogenetic analysis to try to understand which modern birds this fossil is most closely related to. And upon completion of these analyses, I found with very strong support that this fossil appears to be related to a group of birds that in the modern day is restricted only to sub-Saharan Africa. These birds are called turacos. Interestingly, this fossil is actually found in Wyoming. And so the fact that the fossil is from North America and yet its extant relatives are from Africa casts some doubt on the simplistic idea that this clade originated and diversified solely in Africa. And in fact, the more of these northern hemisphere fossils that you take into account, the more you see this pattern emerging over and over again, which casts some doubt on classic ideas of basically how these birds became distributed in their modern distributions, and suggests that vicariance, or the breakup of the southern landmass called Gondwana, likely was not responsible for generating these modern biogeographic patterns that we see today.
When you're looking at birds, you've got to take into consideration that many of them are migratory. How do you address that? How do you know that this fossil might not have... Is it a flightless bird? Or?
No, this is a flying bird, and in fact, that's a really important point. Birds fly, and they're incredibly dispersive. And therefore, this idea that the breakup of continental landmasses may have been responsible for the modern distributions of modern birds is actually not really intuitive, given how dispersive we know birds to be. And in fact, even in the historical record, there's evidence that living birds have basically they colonized new continental landmasses just in the last couple hundred years. For example, a common bird that's basically distributed around the world today, a bird called the cattle egret, was formerly not found in the New World. But in fact, in the early 20th century, a population of cattle egrets from Africa actually made their way to South America by flying, colonized the New World, and are now found all the way up into southern Canada. And in fact, they're quite common. So the fact that birds fly is a really important thing to take into account when you're studying their biogeography.
So what conclusions can you make off this work then? Can you say that birds, well, why are they restricted to the continents that they are today?
That's a tough question to answer, but I think the most important conclusion to draw from this work is the fact that Gondwana, this southern landmass, broke up a very long time ago. And if the breakup of this continent were truly responsible for driving some of the diversifications that have led to modern bird diversity, it would invoke some divergences within modern birds up to about 100 million years ago, which is incredibly old. And one thing we know looking from the modern bird record is that it's very, very unlikely that many of these modern lineages existed prior to about 65 million years ago. And so the fact that Gondwana breakup is frequently invoked for driving the diversification of these birds has important temporal implications, and ones that I think are very dubious in light of some of these results.
All right, Daniel, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, David.
So we've reached the final day of the conference, and I've caught up with Claudia Marticano, who's co-chair of the organizing committee, and I just wanted to get your thoughts on how the conference has been.
The conference was wonderful. I think that we expected less people that in fact arrive. So it's a multidisciplinary conference. There is people from all over the world, nearly 47 or 48 different countries. There is a lot of different issues that was covered in these talks every day. And what we are glad is that we really can catch that everyone is happy. You know, it's important in a conference, apart from the, I would say the, you know, let me think, academic point of view, you know, that also people can meet each other, networking, you know, talk, and that is a very important point of a conference. Okay,
so how did Mendoza actually get this conference?
First of all, we applied 4 years ago for Argentina, okay? You have to apply to make some kind of presentation to the International Paleontological Association to be selected as a for the conference. We did that, apply 4 years ago, and when we were thinking about that, with the chair and the other co-chair, we are three women, I'm from Buenos Aires, the chair is here from Mendoza, and the other co-chair is from another province, not a very, very big city, but quite large, that is Cordoba. We were discussing about the venue, and the first thing first, I said, not big cities, not Buenos Aires, because big cities, people get diluted, you know? It's not so easy to be all together, to, you know, to find each other, to have a cup of coffee or lunch or whatever. Big cities are problematic. So we were thinking about Mendoza and Cordoba, and then finally we decided Mendoza. Okay, because it's easy, you can just walk around, there is many hotels, and it's very pretty. Very pretty. And also, we were thinking a lot of field trips, and this city is nearly in the middle of the country, so you can have many field trips around, and it's all of them in the surrounding areas.
So, Argentinian paleontology, is there a lot in the area?
Argentinian paleontology have a very, very long story. So paleontology started here a long time ago. You know, we have a very long story of paleontology, tradition of paleontology. Okay, it's nothing new. We have more than I said nearly 200 years or more. So what is interesting is that for us, paleontology is a very strong academic branch of science and geological science, earth sciences. So this is also what we presented when we applied to be the selected for to do the IPC. It was that we have a lot of paleontologists all around the country. We have paleontologists from many different branches of paleontology, so and very good collections and lovely outcrops. So we thought that would be a wonderful opportunity to many people to come here and, you know, to share with us.
And so what has been your favorite thing throughout all of this conference?
Oh my goodness, my favorite thing was I like conferences that they are very, I would say, eclectic, you know, in the time that you can, if you are interested in to see, you know, Proterozoic or Ediacaran or, you know, or Cenozoic mammals, you can, you know, you have all the, you know, all this, how is it, many different things at the same time. I am a vertebrate paleontologist, and I do basal tetrapods. But because I teach vertebrate paleontology in the University of Buenos Aires, but also paleoecology, I like many different things. So that was great, you know, just jump around in between rooms and see completely different things, you know, go for the whole Phanerozoic and the whole Tree of Life, nearly.
And how was the conference dinner last night? A lot of fun?
Oh my goodness, yes, was great. Something that we decided is, because this is the land of, you know, wine, Buenos Aires is very, very famous by Malbec and the wine. So we decided that we have to do not only a memorable conference because the academic part, but also, you know, people will enjoy what we have here and famous, that is Malbec. So we decided that should be a lot of wine. So nobody will be, you know, running out of wine wasn't an option. So I think that the party was great. We did it in a bodega, and with a huge terrace facing the mountains, and people were so amazed about that and have a lot of wine and dancing. So yeah, it was a good party.
Yeah, I saw everyone having a great time. So looking forward now, do we know where the next IPC is going to be held? When is that decision going to be made?
We'll be in 4 years, but the decision I think is will be until the end of the year, okay? Already two countries applied, is Japan and France, to do it in Paris. They did presentations in one of the meetings, I think it was on Tuesday. But there is another country that can still apply until the end of the year, because the decision is made by the committee of the International Paleontological Association. They will decide, finally. So we don't know, at least at present we have two candidates, Paris and I think it's Tokyo, I don't know. Yes, but Japan certainly.
So it's just the case of staying tuned to hear any news. Okay, well, thank you very much for having us throughout this conference. It's been a great pleasure to be here and reporting on it. And hopefully we'll see everyone again in Japan or Paris.
Paris, or maybe somewhere else. Thank you so much for inviting me to talk to you.
Cast was brought to you by Dave Marshall with Joe Keating, Laura Soule and Liz Martin. It was made possible by funding from the Paleontological Society and the Paleontological Association, with music supplied by the Ocean Collective. Please visit paleocast.com for the supplementary material for this episode and for our archive of past programs. Subscribe to our Twitter feed at paleocast and like us at facebook.com/paleocast to get all the latest news.